Job. And it's been long planned, and in many ways it's not the most ideal Sunday, is it? Here we baptise Julie, celebrating her faith today, and we want to celebrate all the good news of Christian faith. And now we're starting this service. It's probably not a series. It's probably not the best advert for the Christian faith. Have faith in God and see how much pain you may have to go through. It's probably not the best-selling line, I would have thought. But why are we doing this? We planned this. We've thought about doing this series for a long time. And actually, I want to emphasize the core of my being, that Christian faith is good news. But we also have to face the suffering. And even in this very small church community, we've had tragedy upon tragedy, I have to say, over the time that I have been here. And just in these last few years, another of our members diagnosed with MS, Duncan, was here, moved to the Isle of Wight, died last year of motor neurons in his 50s. And then just 6 years ago, Godfrey, who was a minister here, afflicted by a brain tumour and has been disabled ever since and very confused and lives in Westcott House nursing home now. So all of this around us, the suffering, and we cannot, of course, ignore it. And the good news I want to say to you of Christian faith has to be found in the suffering, not in spite of it. And so today and through this series, and if you want to follow the series on Job, it's not in consecutive weeks, so please look out in the magazine for when we are preaching on Job. But in this series, we will be emphasizing that, yes, indeed, there is good news and there is bad news to face as well. And we're going to start today with bad news. The first thing the book of Job tells us, that even for a person who has deep faith in God, a person who is blameless and upright, bad things happen. Awful things, truly atrocious things happen to people who know and love God, as they do to anyone else. As we have heard, it's not sure who Job was or where this place was, and it may be a poem actually, but it's a timeless story. But as we hear from the story, Job was hugely blessed in family and business. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East, and he loses everything. And then misery upon misery, he's afflicted by painful sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head. And the writer of the book of Job is determined to emphasize that he had done nothing to deserve this. He had not done anything wrong. Job made all the purification sacrifices required by his faith, and we are told he was blameless. And in all the disaster that has befallen Job, he cries what are perhaps the most poignant words in the Bible. What I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. Chapter 3, verse 25. And we have to get this awful truth into our beings. Faith in God does not mean that what we most fear, what we most dread, will not happen. It can and it does. Thank God it is rare. Thank God that the blessings of this life far, far outweigh the tragedies. Thank God that miracles do happen. But sometimes, just sometimes, physical miracles do not happen. Tragedy comes. What we most fear, what we most dread, may befall us. And this, of course, can be a great challenge. The Bible scholar and counselor David Atkinson wrote this: there is a dark side to living in God's world. Sometimes we are under God's shadow. There is a struggle of faith as well as contentment in God's provision. Bad news indeed. And we can ask why. Why, if there is a God of love and he is all-powerful, why do bad things happen to good people? And a clue is given in Job, where it is clearly Satan, the devil, the force of evil, call it what you want, is the instigator of all the attacks on Job. The Christian faith seen through the Bible is clear that there is a malevolent force loose in the world, the universe, causing havoc and destruction. And I don't know about you, but I have no problem at all believing there's a devil. I almost give up watching the news because I'm so sickened by the cruelty, the indifference, the callousness, and seems clearly that there is a force of evil in the world. And Christians believe that somehow, some way, that force of evil has got into the very fabric of the creation and bringing disease and such things as well. Of course, then we're still left struggling with why on earth does God allow evil to roam the earth, going to and fro in it. There may be some suggestions that come out through this series on Job, But in the end, I've got to say to you that none of them are satisfactory. The bottom line is, we just do not know, we do not understand. But it may be an aside, does anyone understand our existence? Does anyone understand our existence? Can I ask us, we'll just pause for a moment, that's very good to just enjoy your walk. But as you're, have a think, if anyone here can explain our existence, please tell me while we're pausing for a moment. Does anyone, and this may seem like an aside, but has anyone here read a book on quantum physics, quantum mechanics, and understood it? Anybody? I can't even understand the book reviews that I try and read. I pick up things like the Copenhagen interpretation that says the act of measurement constructs the reality that is measured. I read about Bell's theorem in which two particles are inexorably linked no matter how far apart they are. I try to understand about Schrodinger's cat in a box with a vial of poison, and apparently the cat is neither dead nor alive until the box is opened. And it may be that in one reality the cat is dead and in another it is alive. So I read and don't understand. Apparently quantum science leads us into a world of parallel universes and teleportation. And it's not surprising we struggle to understand all of this. As Richard Feynman, Nobel Prize winner in quantum physics, famously said, "I think I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics." And why this aside then, apart from this whole thing being a bit of a hobby horse at the moment for me, simply we do not understand our existence, including why in a world of so much goodness there is also much suffering. And it may be that as further discoveries in science are made, we get a better understanding too of theology. So that is the bad news. Bad things happen to good people and we do not know why. So thank God there is resounding good news. Even when the things we fear most, the things we dread occur. And it is the presence of God yet there in those times and experiences. That is seen in Job's response to all his suffering. Remarkably, in response to all of his losses, he praises God, falling to the ground in worship. "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." And in all of this, the writer says Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Throughout, Job clings onto his faith by his fingertips. And chapter 3 does see him very understandably falling into a great depression. He wants to die, saying, "I have no peace, no quietness, I have no rest, but only turmoil." There can be no false jollity for a person of faith in suffering. The awful emotions have to be faced, felt, expressed, and depression is not necessarily to be feared. But even in depression, Job manages to hold on that somehow, somewhere, in all of the agony, in all of the mess, that God who made him and loves him is yet still there. And the contrast is seen in Job's wife, who, it has to be said, is not helpful. "Curse God and die," she says. "How can you hold on to your faith when all this has happened? God does not exist. There's no meaning. There's no purpose. We just forget it. Give up. And just give up on this life," she is telling Job. No meaning, no purpose. Any hope that God will is there. Any hope that good will prevail. And yet Job manages to hold on, even through his depression, that God is there somewhere in the mess. And we shall see as you go through the book of Job that this becomes his salvation. And this is the great confidence of Christian faith, that God is right there with us in the suffering, and nothing but nothing can separate us from his love in Jesus Christ. And actually, it surely always is his presence, this confidence we need, rather than answers when bad things happen. As a Yale philosopher, Nicholas Waterstorff, whose 25-year-old son died in a mountain climbing accident, he wrote a book entitled Lament for a Son. And he said how time and time again, in the depths of his grief, he was deeply moved and strengthened by the presence of the crucified one who chooses to suffer with suffering people. The Christian faith is centered on God in Christ, entering the mess and suffering of our world, being there with us in the agony. The presence, the being there, that is just so vital for the person going through that suffering. And then the Christian faith goes on to say that God not only enters the suffering, but transforms it, bringing resurrection. Hope again. Suffering does end. New life occurs. Again and again throughout time and place, resurrections are experienced. Resurrections that resound from the resurrection of 2,000 years ago. And in this experience of resurrection, there is sure hope that actually evil and suffering will end. There will be a day when God wipes every tear from our eyes. There will be a heaven, maybe for all I know, one of the parallel universes of quantum physics. And there will be that day of no more death or mourning or crying or pain. The bad news and the good news. It is all there in Christian faith, the faith into which Julie is to be baptized. And the great joy is that the good news will prevail. A great saintly man, and be moved by the people who do think and write and pray about these issues so much. They don't have explanations, but they do have experience to speak of. And so Timothy Ratcliffe, a monk and writer, said this: "The mystery of evil has no explanation, but is swallowed up in the more profound mystery of good." And over this series in Job, then, we will see how to respond to suffering. And actually, the answers are all there in the readings we've had today. Hold on, even if it is by your fingertips, to the God who is there somehow, some way in the mess. And be alongside those who suffer. The three friends of Job get it exactly right in this first instance. They sit there and they say nothing. And the unfortunately, Job, you could almost end the book of Job there, it would be great. But actually it goes on for about another 40 chapters because the friends keep waffling on about what's happened and what's gone wrong. And they're trying, it seems, to find reasons and they're trying to justify God. God cannot, is not to be explained, but he is to be experienced. His presence in the suffering is how we are to respond and bring his presence to the suffering. Somebody, a deep Christian who was dying of cancer at a fairly young age, said, "I've reached rock bottom. I've reached rock bottom. And I found the rock to be solid." And that is the hope and presence that we, alongside those who are suffering, can bring to people. That God is yet there and we can represent by our presence. Not trying to explain, but being there, bringing his love, his sure hope to the suffering. Holding on to the coming triumph of the good news. Amen.